Are we looking at a team that folds on the road or one that punches back at home? Wisconsin goes down at Ohio State, then responds with authority against Iowa. So which version is real? And that's not all. Spring football is almost here, and we've got Nick Osen from 247 Sports joining us. I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective. Woohoo! Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we start with Wisconsin basketball after a split week that told us a lot about this team. A tough road loss at Ohio State, followed by a strong response at home against Iowa. So what did we actually learn? We'll break down the recent play of Nick Boyd, John Blackwell, Nolan Winter, and Austin Rapp, talk about what needs to happen for this group to make a real March push, look at projected NCAA tournament seeding, and set expectations for the next two games. Then we turn our attention to football with spring ball right around the corner. What are the biggest storylines shaping this team right now? We'll also dive into early 2027 O-line recruiting, Wisconsin's positional needs, and discuss key offensive line targets. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button. Thanks so much for all your support of the show. It's been a while since we've had this man on the show to join us. And, you know, he needs no introduction, but he's going to get one.
The Bucky Report proudly welcomes Nick Osen from 247 Sports.
The one, the only Nick Osen from Badger247.com, 247 Sports beat writer for Wisconsin. Buddy, how you doing, man? Welcome back to the show.
Guys, I appreciate it. It's been way too long. Thank you guys so much for, you know, we all moved around the schedule a little bit. There's a lot to talk about. And frankly, I just missed talking with my guys. So we had to make it happen. And we'll start to ramp this up here, you know, at least that once a month or so during spring ball, April. Mm-hmm. And then you already know with OVs like we did last year. So I mean, we'll keep it rolling.
This is the time of the year where Justin is like getting all like fiending for excitement of you know, all the stuff related to recruiting. And then, and I keep, so yes, this is also the time when Nick, you're going to see Nick Osen a lot, because I mean, as you know, as he said, OVs, it's like Justin's Christmas Day. So we're going to be doing all that stuff. We're going to be talking all that stuff for sure. But Justin, man, how you doing, bud?
Good. It's been like what, 4 hours since we last talked, something like
that's
that.
Right. That's right. That's right. It was a good day. It was a good day. We were talking because we were on Locked On Badgers earlier, talking about the Wisconsin Badgers' massive victory today over Iowa. So we're going to start there in just a minute. But first, I mean, listen, the comments are already talking about it. USA, USA, USA. Zach Bartz says, a great Sunday. Badgers win and U.S. men's hockey wins gold. It's very nice. I love the Olympics. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. So we will, let's start there. Did you guys get up this morning and watch the hockey game?
I actually woke up in time, or finally turned the TV on in time to see the trophy or the medal ceremony.
So the puck drop was 5 a.m. here. I did not get up at 5 a.m. because I was going, I was going to wake up when I woke up, which I did. And I actually caught the entire third period and then all overtime. So it was just incredible. Nick, are you an Olympic guy, or do you like the Olympics?
I like the Winter Olympics. I love the Summer Olympics. Okay. I also watched about the same amount as you, Rajiv. I will be honest, I had set my alarm and it just kind of happened that it was perfect timing. I got a group chat. I've actually mentioned it to you guys before. Some ESPN buddies, it's always going. So there were a bunch of messages already. And man, what a way to really cap off a pretty strong overall Olympics for U.S.
Yeah, man, I'm a big fan. I love all winter, summer. We talked about it last week too. It's massive. But yeah, kudos to the USA, who this was their first gold medal since Miracle on Ice, by the way. I mean, it has been that many years since this team won the gold medal in hockey. So kudos to that. That I used to not like. Now I like hockey. I'm a Golden Knights fan, but I used to really only watch Olympic hockey, and because for some reason, like Olympic hockey just got me excited. But this is great. So fantastic. And then of course, you dovetail that in with a Badger victory against Iowa, which, I mean, What's not to like about that? We desperately needed to come back after a very difficult game against Ohio State during the week, a game that really showed a bit of a lack of kind of everything. So let's just start there, Justin. I haven't talked to you, Justin, really much, too much about the Ohio State game. What were your initial thoughts of that sort of debacle that we had early in the week?
Anger, frustration. honestly, we couldn't get out of our way in that one. Like, it was like we were stuck in the mud and Ohio State was just dictating that entire game. And I did not expect that to happen. I thought that both Boyd and Blackwell played awful in that game. And that was a prime example of what happens if neither shows up. Boyd got something going a little bit late, but by that point, the game was kind of already decided. Like, we struggled so much to get anything consistently going on offense that we just never really truly got on a run to put them in a tough spot.
I've said multiple times this year that we've gone on, like, we take these two steps forward and we take a little step back. You know, that Minnesota first half was a big step back for us. You know, remember that whole debacle, and then the Indiana game was a little bit of a step back. But then you have the Michigan win, you had the Illinois Michigan State game, and then you pull back a little bit. Yes, that's your one step back. But what we most needed was the response coming after that game, mm-hmm. which we got today, which we're going to get into. But Nick, that was a tough game that Ohio State won. I mean, it just seemed like we never were really into it. They owned the entire game, just like Justin said. Like, we never really did anything. Every time we thought we started to get a run, we're like, oh, maybe, oh, we're within 10, or within 12. Oh, no, we're down by 18 again. Like, just like that. I mean, is that concerning to you, or was it just kind of a blip on the radar?
Yeah, Rajiv, I think that's really accurate about kind of how it went down. You know, I was out there for coverage, and, you know, I feel like you don't often, you guys, obviously you're fans, but you know sports as well as anybody. You don't often like to say the energy wasn't right or the other team wanted it more, you know, those types of things. But when you see it and then you hear it from the head coach, and then I think we spoke with Braden Carrington, you hear it from all those areas. That was kind of what it was to me, Rajiv. And I don't feel like that has been an issue. You look at the other two losses in the last month or so, right? USC and then Indiana was kind of stolen from them. I think we would agree. So I don't think it's as concerning, Rajiv, because it did feel like a kind of go and flush it. I don't think that has been a consistent issue. If that would have happened today, you know, obviously, and they didn't get the job done against Iowa, then yeah, you are concerned. But otherwise, like Justin said, the best players, they didn't shoot well. And frankly, I give a little credit to that desperate Buckeyes team. Like, they played a good Michigan State team well today. And just from the jump, they had Wisconsin scouted pretty well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like, and I gave credit to them on the reaction show. I think Ohio State played a great game. They had a great game plan. Obviously, Mobley was out, right? But Royal just decided he was going to go off. And Thornton has been a thorn in our side for seemingly decades. What year is he in? Is he in like his 10th year?
This is it for him.
But he's fantastic. I mean, that team really, you're right. They were up against the ropes, and it really was like a great performance by them, which is, it doesn't bother me as much. Like, I didn't want to lose the game that way because we looked like crap, basically. So that part sucked. But losing on the road in the Big Ten at Ohio State, in the grand scheme of things, isn't actually that big of a deal, right?
No.
And I mean, like, they're a top 35 net team, but it's just like it's a little bit difficult to see that. Are you worried about that, Justin, like going forward? Are you worried about these performances that we kind of pull back on? And like, where's your headspace as far as like that kind of a game moving forward?
My question for that game was that a game where they came in feeling themselves maybe a little bit too much? And because of that, they didn't have the focus that they should have had. Like, oh, we just handled these two other teams that are highly ranked teams. We should be able to deal with this. And that, to me, is where I wonder if they just didn't come in fully focused on this game thinking, hey, we're playing really well. We'll be fine. And you can't come in that way. Every team in the Big Ten has to have your full attention. Otherwise, you lose by 15, like what happened in this game. I felt like the last time we played Ohio State that we were the more talented team. Like, we were more skilled. I felt like athletically they were a more athletic team, but I felt like we were better basketball players. I did not feel that way in this game. I felt like they took it to us the entire time, and we just didn't get off the mat when they punched us in the mouth. And that was the thing that frustrated me. It was like, it didn't feel like we got the response after the initial kind of hit that I expected. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that, I do think, was Rapp being out. He was such a big factor in that first game, and I think nobody was shooting well in this game. I think they badly needed somebody that they could count on for some outside shooting to kind of open things up on the interior. They didn't have that in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, Rapp has been, like, when he plays, we play a lot better, and when he doesn't, obviously we had that loss. I think even if Rapp plays that game, we lose to Ohio State, but that's okay. The recovery was great, right? We come back home. We needed to get the win against Iowa. Nick, it was fantastic. Like, you were there today. Tell us about the atmosphere. Tell us about your initial thoughts on a great, great game today.
Yeah, Rajiv, I feel like you took the words out of my mouth a few minutes ago when you had said what was most important was what? The response. And I feel like that is something this team has consistently done really well. Now, obviously, early on, they get a little bit behind. I didn't feel like that was, you know, effort, anything like that. Frankly, I was a solid team. That's why it's such a good win. Bennett Sturts was setting things up. I thought the atmosphere was solid. You know, I know that you guys and many of our readers have encouraged me to be a little critical at times with things, right, as I've grown in my network here. And, you know, I grew up going to games at the Kohl Center. I won't shy away from it. I hope at some point it can get back to that, okay, because it isn't quite that. However, this year has been better as a whole. It's been much better than my first 2 years on the beat. So good crowd. Actually, really good crowd, solid atmosphere, if that makes sense. Like, they filled the place. They did some fun things, you know, entertainment-wise to get the groups ready. Boyd obviously loves pumping the guys up. And then, frankly, guys, I think this is one of the first times I've said, I'm not sure I've given Gar and the staff enough credit for that addition. I mean, we can talk about Rapp, which I think we did a little bit, obviously, with the OSU game, missing him. Nolan Winter has just been a bastion of consistency, and I know you guys have loved that. But frankly, I mean, this backcourt, if you get two out of three out of Boyd, Blackwell, and then your forward Winter, if either of them is really having a great game, they can still beat anybody. So I thought it was good. I think if they really kept the guys in, they probably could have won by 18, 20 against a good, likely tournament-bound Iowa team. As friends would say, that's exactly what the doctor ordered today, guys.
Yeah, man. Justin, what were your thoughts? I mean, I know we talked about it on the reaction show, but what are your overall takeaways?
Yeah, I think one of the things when talking about giving this coaching staff credit, we kind of brought it up a little bit on Ryan's show, and I don't think you can argue that this is probably the best group of players, both from recruiting standpoint and portal, that we've seen in a while. I do think, like, we're not used to seeing true freshmen get on the court and not look completely, like, overmatched. I think it's been pretty impressive how far Jones has come over the course of the season, where he had times where he just looked completely like he was lost out there. I think Rapp is another one of those where you watch him and you're like, man, he's made a ton of progress as the season's gone on. And Bielskis, he came in, he's been a little bit slower. But I also think that there's reasons for that. Like, he's a guy who's I don't know how good his English is. I'm sure there's some level of a barrier there based off of him not being, you know, the country he comes from is not English speaking. So he has been a little bit slower. I think that there's some things in his game that do put a ceiling on it a little bit. His outside shot's never going to have a great deal of touch. It's kind of, you know, a rocket launcher going off when he puts it up. But they've done pretty incredible job of getting guys who I think that you can look at and say, we didn't miss on anybody. There's nobody that I've seen that I'm like, yeah, this guy's not turning into anything. We've had that in the past a little bit under Gar.
That's well said.
Greppy was one of those guys that we look at now and we're like, eh, he's just kind of there. But this group overall, I think every one of these guys we feel pretty confident is going to at least be a solid contributor as their time goes on.
Yeah. I was so impressed with the recovery today. Just to win that game was just so important to us, because the last thing we needed to do was lose another game in bad succession. Then have a two game road stand, like, which they're not difficult teams to beat, but it's still games on the road. We needed to take care of business at home against a top 25, now 28 net team, which is, that's very good. They're ranked higher than us, Iowa's, in the net rankings. Mm-hmm. That's important. And to get that win at home and honestly playing, the defense was obviously, it's always going to be a problem, right? We gave up way too many like good open looks for Iowa in the first half, but in the second half, things tightened up and we frustrated their star. His name escapes me now. That guy's incredible. What is his name? Nick
Sturts, Bennett Sturts.
Yeah. Sturts. God, Lee, he is incredible. That guy. Holy cow.
He's a good player.
He's unbelievable. He's a good player. I would pay any amount of NIL to get that guy to come to Wisconsin. Holy shit. He's good at basketball. I mean, everything he does is awesome, but we really protected that well. Our bigs defended well. And obviously the story of the day is Nick Boyd. I mean, 27 points, just an unbelievable performance, a heroic performance, honestly, from Nick Boyd. I mean, Justin, best guard on this, best guard the Badgers have had since finish the sentence. Like, where do you put him, like, historically right now?
Even though it's only a year. It's probably Johnny Davis, even though I think, like, if we're going to go point guard.
Yeah, let me say point guard.
Yeah,
point
if guard. We're going to go point guard-esque, I feel like he is the biggest handful out of anybody since Devin Harris.
So I said Devin Harris too. Ryan said Jordan Taylor, but I'm like, I would say, and I feel like I can understand that argument.
You could hold him down in ways that you can't do it with Boyd. And it's he had some physical limitations that made him a guy you could defend a little bit easier in some ways because he was never going to get downhill. In fact, the biggest frustration we had with him was one of those things that we kind of had with Chucky Hepburn a little bit at times too in his time here, which was like drive and kick a little bit. You never go to the rim. And he was such a floor general. He's a great outside shooter, but he was not a guy that got downhill towards the rim and was able to create for other people in that way. And that was the frustration I had with Taylor. The other guy who I would say is potentially Hughes, I think is kind of in that same ballpark, but I don't think he was ever capable of going off in the way that Boyd does.
I love that question. Yeah, Rajiv, that's awesome. So look, I was going to say Jordan Taylor, you know, surprise, surprise, I'm agreeing with Ryan or you guys, one of them. But I think in terms of sheer potency and scoring, Justin, I would tend to agree. I think it's probably since Devin Harris. And, guys, I think I saw a stat floating around. I'm not reporting it, but that he's on pace to have the best average since Michael Finley.
Correct. He's going to be the first player to potentially score
over 20 points per game
in a season.
Which, I mean, some of the guys, like, I understand it was slower paces of play, but you talk about Harris or, the National Player of the Year or runner-up Frank Kaminsky. You talk about those guys, NBA players and Decker, like, unbelievable to think about. And then Blackwell's right there at just about 19. I think it sounded like 18.7 or so. Nolan Winter. It's a fun team, guys. And if I can say, because I know we've got a lot of great stuff, if I can just say, and you guys are true ball knowers, like, I understand he's not going to fill up the stat sheet all the time, but I hope if you're truly watching, people see what Andrew Rohde's doing. If you watch the on and off court when he is not in that offense and he's not in the mix, or he's not working his tail off defensively, like, the team's simply not as good. Are there more potent scoring lineups? Sure. But just, you know, I really, really watched, especially as Wisconsin was kind of pulling ahead, I was locked in on him a little bit. And you know what? I'm sure he thought he was probably going to average maybe 9 and 5, 9 and 6, something like that. But he's been a good player in his role, and he really just kind of embodies that Badger mentality.
Yeah, I agree. He's a guy that I've been like high on all year. I think that for me, the biggest thing on any game for him is the assist and turnover numbers. Nice. That's the only two numbers I care about looking at for Andrew Rohde are assist and turnovers, because he is a great passer. And when he has a 4 and 4 or 5 to 1, which he had a 4 to 1 today, that's great. But if it's 1 and 3 or 1 and 4, if he turned the ball over 3 or 4 times, like, he did against Ohio State, That's not the Andrew Rohde that we can have, because he can be such an elite passer, but he has other holes in his game. But yeah, I totally agree. And the answer I agree is Devin Harris, because you said it right, Nick. You used the word potency. The potency of that Nick Boyd has scoring the basketball is insane. Like, he can go off. Yes, he's single hand dominant. Everybody in the world knows this, but they know it too, and they couldn't stop him today. And that's how good Nick Boyd really is. And then he can step back and hit the three, and he can go, and he's passing the ball well. Like, man, like, he really is one of the best players that I've ever seen put on the shirt for us, because I just think, like, he is – the dude is really – here's the thing, man. He's getting better as the season progresses. Mm-hmm. Every single game, he's getting gelling with the team more, and it's really awesome to watch. Let's kind of move over to the other side of the backcourt, though, and talk about John Blackwell, Justin. Like, give me your thoughts. Today obviously wasn't a good game. His season arc is what I want to know from both of you. Like, tell me what you think about everything that you've seen out of him this year. Here's a guy who was awesome last year, was testing the NBA waters, came back. I mean, I've been very hot and cold on what I've been seeing out of John Blackwell. What do you think, man?
He's got a little bit of those NBA guys who they come in, they have a big game, like they blow up for like 15 points in a quarter, and then they just dud out for like a period of time. And that's kind of how he's been this season, where you look at it and you're like, why can't you just be this guy all the time? Like, the skill set is there for him to be consistently productive. And we brought it up on Ryan's show. And I said, I want to see him show the level of intensity that we see from Boyd consistently. Because if those two were trying to one-up each other the whole time, like, meaning that they brought that level of energy, like, I'm going to be the alpha on this team. This team probably almost never loses, because when they're that playing at that level, there are very few teams that can match them. And the problem is we've seen a lot of this season where it's one guy or the other, or Blackwell just doesn't show up at all. Like today, the whole first half, like he just disappeared, and some of it was he got an early foul, but still, you've got to find ways to be more productive. And my biggest thing is, you know, when he came back, the way they were looking at it is, you're going to be the guy on this team. You're going to be the leader. This is your team. And it feels like he's moping a little bit because he thinks that Boyd came in and kind of took a little bit of his lunch. And it shouldn't be that way. And especially for a guy that has NBA aspirations. And listen, let me be clear. I have no insight on this. I don't know anything behind it, but this is just me kind of reading it based off of what I'm seeing from this team. He needs to go out there and prove himself that he's the guy on this team, or at least they should be fighting over that spot, as long as it's not negatively impacting the team. And there are too many times where it seems like if Boyd goes off, he just kind of sits back and lets him do it.
Yeah. Nick, you're there every day. You see him, you interview him. What are your thoughts on his season arc?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. Like, I think I probably thought it would have been a little bit, you know, kind of closer in some of these games scoring-wise. I will defend or kind of be a little bit of devil's advocate to Justin, just because I do think he's very much a rhythm player, right? So, but you know, he's relying on his skill set, like you said, getting to his spots, muscling down. It's not always – he can shoot threes obviously very well, but he's not just kind of a chuck and go like a Klay Thompson type, and he's not just going to blow by you speed-wise like Boyd. So I think some of these games, or if it maybe doesn't get going early, or, you know, he does get into foul trouble, I think that's been two out of the last three games, I think that throws things off a little bit. I do think there's something, not saying anything crazy deep or mentally or anything like that, but – I'm just, yeah, you know, I'm not sure if maybe this level of impact from Boyd was expected, right? I don't know if anybody thought it'd be this level quite, because I do think it was going to be Blackwell and Winter's team. So I think that has been interesting. And frankly, guys, I think just sometimes he's had some off nights. Obviously, I'm going to be watching very closely, I think, on this road trip, because he has had some massive games on the road. I don't have a doubt in my mind that he's an all Big Ten type eventual pro. But like you said, Rajiv, the arc has been, you know, interesting. It hasn't been maybe – well, his approach is very, very steady, and Guard would always say that. But, you know, Boyd shows the emotions. Winter's shown a little bit more this year, as we've seen. And Blackwell is a little bit more steady with that. Sometimes that can be really good and consistent. Sometimes maybe people are looking to see more fire in big moments. So – we'll see. I've got a lot of faith, and just know how hard he and Boyd, they spend so much time, like an insane amount of time in the gym. So I think it's probably going to correct here soon, and you just hope it's obviously in time for a big March, because what typically wins in March, fellas? Good guard play.
Good guard play, for sure. And listen, I think that I think you said a good thing there, that he's a rhythm guy. My biggest thing is I want him to then go find the rhythm, like go get into that rhythm, force the issue a little bit more to allow yourself to get into that rhythm. Because, you know, you've seen other guys that are doing that. Like the consistency on the team is getting better and better, right? Winter's getting more consistent. Rapp certainly is getting more consistent. Boyd's getting more consistent. And consistency has been the issue all season. If he could get more consistent, like we have one of the best backcourts in the Big Ten, in the country even, but it's not one of those. It's not even close to the top in the Big Ten if Blackwell isn't finding his level of consistency, which is difficult. Winter and Rapp, two other guys I wanted to touch on before we move on to the talk about some seeds a little bit. Go ahead.
I want to throw one more thing on the Blackwell. Yeah. And part of it is, and we brought it up a little bit again, going back to Ryan's show again. Some of it is the defensive side of the ball. Like you know, even when he's not providing something on offense, he has the ability to go out there and be energetic and provide something on defense. And there are times when he just looks flat out disinterested or unfocused on defense. And that's one of the things that kind of is like, all right, dude, you have like, if you legitimately have NBA aspirations, then we have to hold you to that level of criticism when we're watching you play. And that means we all know that he is not a plus athlete. He's not the type of guy you look at and he's going to go into the combine and have freakish numbers when they put him through his paces. So he's got to be the guy that does everything else from a skill standpoint well, and he cannot have games off where, like, defensively he doesn't seem locked in and stuff like that. And that's been one of the things that we've kind of seen from him as the course of the season. Now, to be fair, we've seen that across the team at times, but he's one of those guys that has, as a leader, that's where he can put it in on his side and try to get people to follow.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. Like, he needs to do that other side of the stuff, the other side of the coin there. The defensive side has got to just be there for him. I think our bigs guys, though, Winter and Rapp, I mean, they are improving game by game. Obviously, Winter's just dominant. He's been dominant all year. Efficiency, scoring, everything. Rapp, obviously, he's making the three again. He's confident. Confidence is everything. And as I said last week, he's playing confident on the defensive side of the floor, which is making him a better defender. Had he been out there for Ohio State, we could have frustrated them a little bit more. He has gone from a defensive liability, Justin. We were talking about how poor he was defensively early in the season to now being one of our better big defenders. Like, it's these two guys are incredible. Just give me a quick thought on both of them, guys. Like, where are you at with this, Nick? Like, these bigs and how they've performed so well over the last few weeks.
Yeah, Reggie, you know, I'll make it quick and efficient for you, man. Rapp, well-deserved growth, and I love to see that truly for him because – it was a little bit of a rough go, guys. Obviously, he gets pulled from, like, the starting switch. And then I think he got dinged up. And then he got sick. And within some of those, he had some huge showings. So that's been awesome. Winter, I don't know if it's just a new nickname I've got for him, but he's just been the bastion of consistency. I've said it really on, you know, your show, writing about it, all that stuff. And to me, that's what he is. He's a walking double-double. He's an NBA skill set, stretching the floor. If it's possible, I think he's upped his motor this year, and it wasn't like an issue by any means, but just the way he brings it clearly leaves it all out there. Guys, it's been a joy to watch.
I mean, we need to get him Jimmy's shoes from Seinfeld. That dunk, man. I want you to tease him on that. I just love when it happened, he's just hanging his head when he's running back down the court. Like, oh man. But
he had a good spirit about it. Like,
yes, he did. Rapp, to me, his awareness has gotten so significantly better on the defensive end of the ball. Like, and that to me is something that's controllable. And I think we've all discussed, I don't ever see him being like a plus defender in the post or anything like that. What he can be is a guy positionally that understands mm-hmm. where he needs to be. Mm-hmm. He is capable of being a guy who boxes out well, and he's capable of being a guy who can be disruptive enough with his frame to force teams to kind of bail out some things rather than getting to the rim. Early in the season, there were times where he just got flat out burned. He's gotten significantly better, and the defense as a whole has, and that he's a big part of that adjustment is the fact that he has done a much better job of keeping track of people, of understanding where he needs to be in his spacing and just not getting too far out, like on three-point shooters and stuff like that. Like, positionally understanding, I need to still be close enough to the post to be able to affect things if somebody, you know, gets a free run down the lane. he's done a great job with that.
That's been the biggest surprise for me. We knew he was a good shooter. He came in as a good shooter, but the fact
that he was always great there.
He's a better positional defender is really the key. Let's talk quickly about the tournament a little bit. I wanted to put up the net rankings. This is current, so this is after the Iowa win. We are now 32nd in the net rankings. We have 5 quad one wins, which we got one today. The other one, incidentally, is Minnesota. There you can see them down there. They're 73rd in the net rankings, and if you win on the road against the top 75 team, it's a quad one victory. So Minnesota on the road actually counts as a quad one. That gives us 5. Washington, as you see, is 56th in the net. That's a road game. That's another quad one opportunity. Oregon obviously is further down there. Maryland we play. But you can see a little bit of a gap there. Obviously, the top of the conference being Michigan, Illinois, Purdue, Nebraska, Michigan State. Those are all top 12 net teams. Then it jumps all the way down to Iowa 28, us 32. And that's really where you see this chasm in the seedings that you've been checking out. You've been seeing like a lot of these upper Big Ten teams getting 1s through 4s, and then Wisconsin on the 7, 8, 9 line. Nick, what do you think is our ceiling here? Do you think we can get up? Where do you feel like our seeding can really get based on what you're seeing now and the opponents that we have left up?
Yeah, Rajiv, this is one of my biggest passions. I think you guys know this from the last few years. A little bit of, you know, informal bracketology, speaking with people that do it a little bit more. So look, the true ceiling, and people can, you know, bookmark this, what have you, but the true ceiling is a 4. Okay. What that would look like is winning out in Big Ten. So that obviously includes at least a couple more quad one opportunities, including winning at Purdue. And then that gets you to, I think, 23 wins, that would be. Yep. And then winning at least one in the Big Ten. From my understanding, speaking with people I trust, that would get you a 4. If really? All of that, yep.
We'd have to be, but beating Purdue is a huge leap.
I would expect us to need to be like win out the conference tournament.
No, because I think whether they say the right thing or not, Justin, or I'm sorry, whether they're honest about it or not, I think the committees are showing that the end of those tournaments, it's just not affecting seeding as much. So what I think is more likely though, guys, and what I think is kind of discussed a lot is right now, I think today, and you'll see schools like Clemson and kind of similar guys have been struggling. So I've got Wisconsin as the last 6 right now. I believe that if they win 4 more games, so let's say these next 3 fall at Purdue and then win one in the Big Ten, you've got a good shot at a 5, but will not be lower than a 6. Those are projections, but they're also from people I trust.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that 4 might be a little tough, but you're right. Listen, a win at Purdue would be insane.
That was just like ceiling. I was being
right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think realistically, I agree 6 is probably where we should be, but I can understand the 7 line. If we lose one of these games, if we don't get Washington, right? If we drop one at Oregon, we lose at Maryland. I don't think we're going to lose at home against Maryland. That would be pretty catastrophic.
Yeah.
But like, if we do that, then I think we're in that 8-9 discussion, and we don't want to be in the 8-9 discussion. You really want to be 7-6 at the worst. 6 is ideal because then you got a 3 seed to get to the Sweet 16. That's really where you want to be. And I'm hoping that we can get there. But the net rankings are favoring us decently. That's a big number for them. Get another quad one victory against Washington. If you get another one against Purdue, that's when you really see that elevate. But if not, I still think you end up on the 6 line. Justin, your thoughts on seeding?
It's crazy to me that it feels like these records are watered down compared to where they used to be when we were kids. And I'm like, I don't remember 5 seeds having 8, 9, 10 losses. I always remember them having like 6.
It's because of the conferences, though. Yeah. Now the super conference.
No, that's totally true.
Games have grown too, guys. Yeah.
But it's just weird looking at it now, seeing the number of losses that teams have and being like, this is a 4 or 5 seed. I do think that regardless of where they get put, and I do think a 6 seed is in play if they play really well down the stretch here. To me, I think it's you get 3 wins and you get 1 in the tournament. That probably gets them potentially into that spot, depending on who they play in the Big Ten tournament for that win. But to me, they're scary. Nobody wants to see Wisconsin in their bracket this season. They're a little bit like BYU last year, where it's like, well, if they come in and they shoot the lights out, you're toast. And Wisconsin got caught by BYU last year. The one difference there is that BYU had kind of a little bit of an animal and a guy who is a plus athlete that was a power forward that could run around and jump and block shots. Wisconsin really kind of has that, but they don't have the physicality in winter. Like, he does some nice things. He's a good athlete, but he's not a guy who's going to go and bang around like a, you know, for better or worse, like a bruiser down in the post.
Yeah.
I'll just add real quick, Reggie. Mm-hmm. What I think they probably end up as is a high six, because I think that winning at Purdue, I was talking with a friend today, on senior day for all those stars, like, that's going to be really, really tough. And then I think you probably have to get to the title game in Big Ten to maybe jump up. But still, guys, to me, as long as you're avoiding the twos and the ones, because there's a pretty big drop-off to me this year from two to three, I don't see a huge drop-off from one to two this year. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I think the most important thing is that a few weeks ago we were talking about whether this team could make it into the tournament, and now we're talking about how high they can get in the seed line. And that's what wins at Illinois and against Michigan State will do for you. You instantly rocket up the quad one numbers. Those are massive, and that's what we have to keep doing. You have to finish out the regular season strong, 11-5 right now in conference, four more to go. Get the three that you need to get. And whatever happens at Purdue, it's fine. I'm not expecting you to win at Purdue. Like you said, Nick, that's a tall order, and that's fine. But if we can get those three more and 14-6 in conference, fantastic. Fantastic. Really good. It would
that
not
Washington be, note is sneaky. Sorry, just Washington wanted to add is very that. Totally. That could be a quad one. That's notable.
It's a quad one. Like, absolutely going to be a quad one. And that is absolutely critical. Like, if we get that win, that's one more notch up the belt. It would not be a show with Nikos if we didn't talk about football. So we are going to do that, and, you know, got to do it. And this is when Justin gets excited, because he much would rather talk about football than basketball. Although he likes talking about basketball too, but, you know, so let's do this. We're going to talk recruiting. We're going to talk some 27 offensive line guys, some targets and things like that. But Nick, we haven't had you on in a while, so I want to just kind of talk about spring football a little bit. You know, practice is going to be starting in about 3 or 4 weeks. As someone who's covering the team on a daily basis, what are some of the storylines that you are most looking forward to heading into spring football?
Yeah, I love the openness of that, Rajiv. I'll give a small one that I'm sure is obvious to everybody. Let's see what Colton Joseph looks like, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously exciting, QB1 and all that. But what I've been really consistent about in terms of competition, here are my two biggest things. What does the offensive line competition look like for this group? And then kind of the back end of the secondary, of the defense. So the secondary competition. I'm sure there are people that we could hit on that we expect. I'm sure I'll be on with you guys again right before that. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, obviously the skill guys, it's more obvious maybe, right? It's fun to see who's blazing by, who's catching touchdowns. But, man, with kind of just the question marks, and I don't say that in terms of questioning these players, but in terms of, a lot of the established starters from the O-line are gone. And obviously, Mateos brought in some really, I think, high potential talented guys from the portal. But as there's kind of been this mix of who has shown it and who hasn't at this level. And you guys know, I think, very highly of a few of the returners, namely, you know, Haywood, Coverley, Mandel. Some of the new additions are figured to be in play. Of course, you can pencil in Austin Kowecki at center if he's healthy. So, that's probably my biggest, because we know that that has to be the backbone of this offense, guys, especially with Joseph's skill set. Like, you need to be able to block for him, but also run block. And I just can't wait to see what that's looking like after 3-4 weeks of practice, fellas.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about, when you're talking secondary, about where they think guys are going to fit? Is West going to be and are they kind of looking at him as a slot, or is he a guy that they think potentially is going to be on the outside?
I would say for West, it's been kind of discussed throughout our board and stuff. I think even from some knowledgeable members that I think he'd be a good fit at the slot corner at inside, but I haven't gotten that on like official, you know, word or anything like that. I will say, and this was on your guys' show, it was right around the portal time. So I guess it's worth just quickly noting, especially as you ask about secondary, the Cairo Skanes move to essentially mostly safety. That sounds, obviously he said it on one of those videos, pretty legit. I'm really intrigued to see what that looks like, because I think that he actually graded out pretty well in his corner reps last year too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. The offensive line to me is just such a big storyline. Like I think we can pretty much, and we've done this exercise, we've looked at depth charts and things like that. We could probably pencil in most of the starters as a placeholder for the most part, but the offensive line is truly in flux, other than Kowecki, which, you know, that everyone knows that. But beyond that, I mean, certainly Kevin Haywood is, we believe to be the starting left tackle, but we don't know. I mean, then you've got a guy like Simmons that's come in there now. And then people are saying Wilkins, PJ might go out to tackle. And then is Mandel going to be a tackle or a guard? And does he belong at the guard position? Who's going to replace Brunner at left guard? All these things are very in flux. And for it being by far the weakest unit on last year's team to now, it turns into the biggest storyline. We've got a ton of people in, Justin, but like, it scares me. I think we've talked about this a lot. Are there other storylines for you that you're like really kind of honing in on before we get into spring?
Well, I mean, to kind of sum up on the offensive line, this is the, like, we forget how young last year's team was. When you have guys coming in as a redshirt freshman, that redshirt year, a lot of that is not necessarily technique and reps. It's getting your body to the point where you're ready to play. So it was probably not fair on our part to expect it. I think we felt like the pedigree of a lot of these guys was that maybe they can challenge for it. But it probably wasn't totally fair to put them on there and say, hey, you need to be ready to go. Now, we are hitting a traditional time frame for a lot of these guys when you'd expect somebody who's going to be a starter to kind of get in there and start making plays. You have guys like Mandel, we've talked about, Carberly. Those guys should be redshirt sophomores now. They should be ready to start pushing this year. So physically, the body should be there. The reps should be starting to add up to the point where they should be providing quality play. And I do think that I feel better about where we're at with some of the guys that they've brought in. I'm probably being a little too much blind faith here with Mateos, but I feel good about him based off of his track record. And yeah, he has a fairly consistent track record across the board of getting quality play. He's kind of like Whitlow in that regard, just at a higher level, where every place he's been, they take a step forward. And if he can get us to even average as an offensive line this season, like, that's a substantial change for Wisconsin. He's capable of making them actually good. It might take a while into the season, but he is that good of a coach that's a possibility. And the talent is there. So it'll be very interesting to see what they have.
Every place, like you said, Justin, has gotten substantially better. Even some in year one with them, honestly. So I think there is some good young talent. I still, like, give me the, Mandel, Carberly, Haywood stock. Like, I still think very highly of those dudes as well that are back in. I don't think it's a mistake that, those are three of the guys, maybe in the whole offense, that the social media team has really, really featured. I mean, even some of the one-on-one videos you're seeing, like, I don't think they're doing those with, guys they don't expect to play, right? If you catch my drift. So obviously there's going to be a swing guy in there, whether that's a Wilkins or Coverly, you see what that looks like. I think Blake Cherry's impressed, at least from what I've heard in the weight room as well. So it's going to be, really intriguing, but I can't wait to watch that, fellas.
Nick, I asked Justin this question last week. I'm curious to your answer, kind of putting you on the spot here a little bit, but I think you'll have at least have an opinion on it. Of the 25 class O-linemen, the Powells, Davenports, Roskies, I'm missing
Watts.
Someone.
Watts, I got you.
Watts, yeah. Watts and Clark. Who of those guys, who do you think hits the field first?
Can I give two or just one?
Yeah, you can give two, yeah.
Okay. I think sure, for me would be Powell. Like, if I had to give one, that'd probably be the pick, just with his, I'd say, versatility, specifically on the inside. And then, man, I actually think Big Mike. I think Roski. I mean, he's somebody that's obviously been healthy now for a while. Wisconsin guy, looks built like a fourth-year college guy. That'd probably be my other answer. But I think Powell, I mean, he obviously traveled, I think, all but like one road games. He was in that mix. You know, Davenport was in that mix, but like others have really, really, I'd say, taken off since.
Yeah, I think Roski is the guy that I picked. I think you picked Powell, right, Justin? I think you said Powell.
Yeah. Roski to me is just a matter of he's kind of like Mandel a little bit, where there was some technique things that needed to be kind of shored up. Like he is absolutely, as an athlete, he's a man child. If he was not injured, I probably would say he was like a raw version of Haywood. Like he's just a freak of nature, 6'8" guy that's got like 10% body fat, but weighs like 320 pounds. Like it's so funny to watch him stand next to the other offensive lineman and have him be roughly the same weight. And he's like chiseled. And like the other guys are like standing there next to him, like look like offensive linemen. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? Like, what the, has he been on HGH since birth or what's going on?
I'm glad. Hey, that's kind of cool though. I wasn't on that show with you guys, obviously. And we all said the same two guys.
Yeah. All right. So before we move on to 2027 recruiting, we're going to stick with the O-line theme the rest of the show here. And talk about 27 guys that Nick's going to bring us up to speed on a bit. Let me ask you each one of these, this question. Give me one player who you feel like you might be a little bit too high on right now, and one player that's underrated in your eyes, Justin, heading into spring ball.
Overrated, I would probably say, and Nick might not like this, I think there are people out there that are looking at Sama and thinking that he might turn into a star. And I don't think that that, like, I don't evaluate him on that grading scale. To me, he just needs to be solid to good. And it's a substantial step up for us. And like that, to me, like if he's 800 to 1,000 yards this year, I'm happy. Like that's a great season from him. It sets the standard again at running back that we look like we can run the football again and not look incompetent. Somebody who I think is going to step up, you know, if we're going to go defense, I think there's a chance that a guy like Kamara, with his athleticism, may find a way to put himself out there, where they just look at it like, this guy's just such an athlete that we got to find a way to get him on the field.
Yeah, I like the Kamara pick. I think that's a good one. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I won't take it as, overrated. But
yeah, maybe just something that you might be a little bit too high on yourself.
Really high on, and it does line up a little bit intel-wise with some stuff I've heard and reported the last couple of weeks. But, man, I'm really excited to see what Malachi Coleman turns out to be. Okay, so that's somebody I am buying on the measurements and the size. That's the one I'm going to say. I have heard from people with knowledge that he is at least impressed in workouts and would appear as somebody that is at least making some moves. That's what I would say right now, but not saying he's going to start anything like that. And somebody that I don't think is getting talked about enough, and Justin, I actually thought you were going to say it. I think you both love this guy. I know for a fact, I think Justin does. I think he's going to find his way on the field in a greater fashion than just special teams and things like that. Grant Dean, I think there's some sneaky young talent in that safety room. Obviously, Burks is going to be in a spot, and maybe he's just with the two, something like that. But it's just a name that I think is quietly emerging.
I think safety is an interesting position because as nice as Young was at Division III, I think that there are clearly guys who have some tools that are just – he doesn't have. Like he's more of a 4.6 guy. You have a couple of guys that are probably pushing low 4.5 to 4.4 range with Dean and Emmerich, and that can just be a game changer and allows Burks to kind of roam a little bit more up in the box. And that to me is a matter of, do these guys understand what they're supposed to be doing on the back end? Because I think that's a room that could shake out completely different this year and really depends on what the level of play is. Because I don't think that I'll be shocked if this staff looks at it like we're just going to let whoever played a lot last year be the guys. I think they're going to look at it like, who gives us the best chance to be effective. And especially with the shakeup a little bit in that room, now that you have Haynes covering the safeties too, Like, how, what is his input on that? Does it change a little bit how they set that room with him being the guy to kind of oversee both and kind of say, hey, you know, I like what this guy's doing here. That might change things a little bit.
Yeah. So for me, the guy I'm probably a little bit too high on is Eugene Hilton, just because I've been very, very high on him and I think he's going to have a good year. But, you know, people keep telling me that, like, I need to, you know, calm down on him being a number one receiver, but we'll see. I hope I'm wrong, but I think I might be a little high on him. And the one I feel like is not being talked about enough is Liam Denitz. Like, Liam Denitz could be a really, really good player for us. And I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but I feel like he might really be able to take the step up to the conference. I mean, obviously he's playing basically at, you know, just D2 or whatever he's playing before. Where was he?
He's playing D3, Hope College.
D3, yeah, Hope. I mean, that, I'm just saying, I like that guy. I think he's not talked about too much, but yeah.
Just to give my perspective on that one, the measurables are real. The things that I have concerns with him are, if you watch the film, he's got technique work to do for sure, because he's used to just being able to overmatch with speed. And he also, I don't know how flexible he is. He's not a guy that really bends the edge super well. And he's going to have to do that at this level. He's not going to be able to just run by everybody, like get in a sprinter stance and go. It will work maybe once or a couple times a season where we'll see him just blow by somebody. But I don't think that he actually has to put some weight on. Like, I think at 230 with his frame, like, there's legitimately some strength concerns I have with the upper body on him, because he just hasn't been pushed like he's going to be pushed playing in the Big Ten.
That's fair.
If he can get those things figured out, he's got like the physical tools are off the charts.
Yeah, that's fair. I like what I see out of him, and I think he could be something special. as we kind of teased earlier in the show, OV season is not too far away. After spring ball, we're going to start really diving into the 27 class. And, you know, no one better to talk to about the 27 class than Nick Osen, and no one better to follow on Twitter at The Real Nick Osen. His work, of course, on Badger247.com. All the stuff behind the paywall, it's fantastic work. So go check out that. If you're not already a member, trust me, it's worth it. Go do it. But let's kind of talk about some of the O-line guys that were sort of targeting Nick. I know we're gonna talk about five of the guys. Let's just start with Cole Reeder. Certainly the bigger name that we're targeting, the four-star guy, he's listed as warm as far as recruiting on your site. Composite four-star out of Germantown, Wisconsin, 6'7", 295. What can you tell us about his recruitment and anything else you want to kind of lead off with in this 27 discussion?
Yeah, I just we were all texting about what position we kind of wanted to hit on. And again, I'm just all about the O-line this year with this class. I think it's going to be a big one with spring ball, like I mentioned. And, you know, I bet the fans will like this. I'm working on being a little bit more, you know, open and liberal with my usage of crystal balls. Okay, so there will be some more. But Cole Reeder, I think it is. Obviously, I've gotten to know him pretty well. Don't want to mess up his name. I've had that crystal ball in for Wisconsin for a while. I think August. Guys, he's been to campus, I think, 17 times, like, for visits throughout his recruitment. Isaac Miller, another guy well into the double digits. And, look, there are some other schools that he really likes. Like, he really likes Kansas. You know, I think he wanted to see Penn State. Ohio State's in the mix. Anytime you've got an offer from there, it's really intriguing. But he was very close with A.J. Blazek. I think Eric Mateos has come in and done a really nice job. He's very familiar with Pat Lambert, Luke Fickell, you know, a bunch of the staff. And again, very close with, like, the program. Cooper Catalano, obviously his good friend and teammate, star on this team now. So I would just say, you know, follow the visits, but I feel good about him. I think ending up, you know, pretty good, strong chance, I would think, at Wisconsin. I'm not changing my pick right now. And also pretty encouraged about the twins you'll get into as well, Rajiv. Other Wisconsin in-state targets.
Justin, when I watched Cole Reeder's film, I feel like he's obviously, the physical tools are off the charts, right? I mean, he's 6'7", 295, got the physical frame. I feel like there's just a lot of, he needs to develop, you know, at this point. I mean, he's playing a little bit too tall sometimes. Like, I feel like his leverage isn't really there, but he doesn't need to, because the guys he's going up against are just very weak. But what do you see in him? Like that was the thing that kind of jumped off the page. Clearly, physical tools are there, but someone that definitely needs to have some better technique overall.
Yeah, I think in Wisconsin, that's always going to be part of it because he's how many times is he going to see a defensive lineman that's going to be physically capable of playing with him? Like the bulk of the defensive linemen he's probably seeing are what, a maximum like 240, probably like 6'1", 6'2". He's going to be just like a mammoth human being standing next to those guys and be able to bully. So what that does is that allows you to kind of get loose with the technique and kind of just win because you're the bigger guy. That's obviously going to have to get better with time. And I have no concerns about that. He has definitely shows great athleticism. I wouldn't say that he's necessarily as loose and free and light footed as some of the guys we've seen in some of these previous classes. I do like him. I think he would be really good at right tackle. It'd be interesting to see what they look at him as. But I think he'd be a great prospect. I think he'd be a huge win in terms of in the state of Wisconsin for them to prove that they can take one of those guys, especially somebody with an Ohio State offer. And I do think Mateos is going to recruit really well. I think he's got a proven track record, and I think he's also a guy, he's very personable.
Yeah, and like you, I mean, you said it. Like, we've got to get our four-star offensive linemen in state. We got to get them. We have to get them. I think you guys have him as at 90, I think, on your site, Nick. I think he's listed at 90. Like, I mean, you got to get that guy. You just have to. Because when we look, going back to losing like a guy like Ryan Sexton, like, we just need to hit on some of these big linemen in the state. And one, the two more that are in state, you kind of brought them up, Nick, are the twins. Is it Mallinger or Mallinger?
Mallinger.
Yeah, so Mallinger, so Hunter Mallinger, Hunter and Reese Mallinger, both composite three stars, both listed as 6'5", 285. They are identical twins, so I suppose that makes sense. Nick, what can you tell us about these guys? What do you like about them? What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so, you know, Rajiv, I know you're a great member on our boards. I know Justin is a little more, you know, active typing with comments, and he would know that, you know, one of the biggest storylines I feel like of this class has been, when is Reese going to get an offer? Is Reese going to get an offer? What's going on with the twins? And, you know, so as we reported about a month ago, going into that junior day, we felt good about that happening. He lands it. And guys, I mean, this isn't, you know, strictly like intel. Like, there's some observing, you know, watching how they interacted with the Wisconsin staff. Again, following the visits a little bit. I'll never forget the excitement from Hunter when he got his offer at camp last year. And, I mean, just some of the things. So they want to play together. Okay, that's obviously not a shock at the next level. I personally don't see them passing up this chance. I think it's pretty obvious that Wisconsin is a top two or three contender because there's been a little bit of buzz about a potential spring commitment. Nothing for sure, but a little bit. They've locked in, obviously, the OV to Wisconsin that first weekend. And I expect them to get to Madison early on in the spring as well. So I would just say, plus they're very, very good friends with Cole. They've become pretty good friends with Loken as well as McIntosh. I feel good there. I think Mateos has actually done a terrific job there. Like, they really liked Blazek, like I mentioned, with Cole. But actually getting that offer for Reese, obviously really important. So I feel good. I mean, if you ask me today, I think three or four of this class members come from Wisconsin just on the line.
Did Cole set a date for his?
He did not. So it was actually interesting timing. I had reported his initial date he was shooting for sometime in mid-January. March, right? Well, originally mid-January. But then obviously, you know, there was the coaching shakeup and taking some more time. So no date, Justin, but I would probably say I see that happening mid-spring.
So probably on like maybe a spring visit to Wisconsin where you take some practice.
Those are his words. Those are Justin's words. Not mine, not Cole's. But
One of my favorite guys in this group that we're going to talk about tonight is composite three-star Reed Gerken out of Perrysburg, Ohio. 6'5", 290. I feel like that guy, when I watched his film, it was like a walking pancake. That dude just dominates, man. Like he just, I really like his technique. I think he definitely profiles as a guard for me. Really good movement off the ball. Very quick, very violent with his attacks. Good use of his hands. Like I liked, of all these guys, I actually liked his film the best. And I'm not, that's not a slight against Ryder. I just feel like the competition that he has to play just is not showcasing his skills on film on just, you know, the junior highlights that I watched. But I feel like Gerken was very impressive. Justin, what are your thoughts on Gerken before Nick tells us a little more about his recruitment?
Yeah, I think in this class overall, I think that it seems very interesting that a lot of these guys feel like interior guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of surprised by that. Like, do we feel super confident about how the tackle room is filled out right now? McIntosh, obviously, somebody that they've considered to be a tackle. And obviously, Cole is somebody that I think default is profiling as tackle. Nick, you brought up that you thought they felt one of the Malingers is going to be a tackle also. You said Hunter, was it, or Reese?
Reese is some of the recent buzz around the offer. Yes, sir.
Okay. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening here. But yes, anytime you give somebody that's seems like a quality athlete that has a little bit of burst to them and ability to be physical on the interior, that's always going to be a guy that, to me, projects as somebody who can move quickly. We kind of saw that with Mandel. When you get some of those guys where you look at them and they're just how fluid they are on the interior, watching them in high school, you're like, man, this guy just, he moves so well for a big guy. And that's such a big deal to be able to find that, because it builds in room for error. Like, when those guys have a quick first step, it gives them the ability to have, you know, I'm not going to say guess wrong, but like, if they kind of second guess themselves a little bit, it gives you more time. You can be slower with the mind if you're faster with the body.
That's kind of a bar right there from Justin, for real. But I would say, you know, Justin, you describe things really well. I think one Malinger has a chance to be inside, you know, one potentially outside. So that's what I heard with some of the buzz. Look, Rajiv, that's an interesting note you've got on Gerken. I think that he has quietly become somebody they really, really like. And, you know, I was actually just messaging with him today. He kindly said, you know, the OB was coming, and then tweeted that out. Recruitment-wise, I've heard a lot of buzz about Wisconsin. I mean, you look back, guys. I don't tout my work too much. Check out his junior day review, okay? Like, he loved his time here. Told me an OB was coming. Might get here this spring. Might not need to. Wisconsin, Kentucky, there will be a couple other visits set. And he tells me that they like him as kind of the swing guy. So the chance to play inside or out, which I think that personally matches his film. I love that he's hearing that from the staff. I think that's awesome feedback from them. And he's one of my favorites film-wise to watch too.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it was very clear that Gerken, I loved his film, man. Really did.
So, Nick, one thing I do want to ask on this, and something we've noticed over the last couple of years, is that with some of these guys, the weekends matter that they're coming in on. I know Gerken's supposed to be coming in on that second weekend. Do you feel like he's a guy that they're looking at legitimately as a take, like, no matter what? Because we've seen in previous years where they'll cancel visits. Do you feel like he's one of those guys where it's just like, this is the weekend that worked for him? And he's somebody that they're very, very high on and want to lock down regardless of who commits ahead of him.
Yeah, it's a good question. I want to make sure I answer it honestly with giving myself a little bit of space here. So obviously, you know, spots fill up, like staff evaluates guys in the spring, not just high school, but their current team. Hey, maybe we don't need, okay, that type of thing. But I will say, based on some of the feedback I've gotten, how much he and his family liked it here, and like we all just said, his film, he feels like one, Justin, that just happens to be the weekend. I'd be very surprised if, you know, something got canceled there. I think if they do take five, which I think we've discussed four or five, I think he's someone they'd love to have. I think that answers the question, but yeah, I get the sense that Malingers have shared their OBs for the first weekend. I expect Ryder there. And so that just feels like kind of that Wisconsin, yeah. Illinois, Minnesota, you know, state focus, that one.
And when I ask that question, just to be clear to people, like, I'm not asking Nick to give me what he thinks that the staff is thinking on this. It's just, this is what we've seen over the last several years on how these things play out. Do we think that that's where it is? It's basically like a, you know, we're looking at it and trying to kind of project of what we think is going to happen. This is no bearing. There's no inside knowledge on that necessarily.
Like, we saw that happen with like running backs, a couple other spots.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's end our discussion with one more guy from the offensive line, Luke Injichak, composite three-star out of LaGrange Park, Illinois, 6'5", 285. Nick, what can you tell us about Luke?
Yeah, another guy that I think his offer list is better than his rating, and I could see him jumping up this spring, similar to a Gerken. Luke shared with me that he'll be visiting, I think, mid-April, so kind of near the end of that spring ball. But he's really built some strong relationships. Obviously, Wisconsin, not new to recruiting Illinois very well. I think he really likes Mateos. And we'll get a better feel in terms of, hey, are we going to see an OB pop here in the near future? But some good competition there. I would say Illinois, I think I'm going off memory. I think it's Kentucky and then Ohio State. Actually, the Buckeyes are legitimately in on with him as well.
What do you think? What do you like about him, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, as a, again, going back to just this group as a whole, it feels like they've really done a good job. Like, I will say this. This is the first class that I've seen with this staff where I look at it and I'm like, I have no idea who their guys are. Like, in previous cycles, it seems like you can kind of define who you think are the ones that they're most focused on. And it's been really difficult to kind of understand, other than the in-state guys, where we had a pretty good idea, this is somebody that they're super high on. You kind of have to wait for those official visits to hit to know who they feel really high on based off of what weekend they're bringing guys in. And we've seen that in the past. Like, you kind of look at the film and you like the way a guy looks, and it doesn't necessarily match up with the way the staff feels on a guy, because like, he'll be the third weekend and you're like, really? That's kind of, that's surprising to me. Mm-hmm. And then it ends up being, you know, somebody who they were high on, but not necessarily as high as the other. I think that he would be a nice pickup if this is somebody that ends up going. It's going to be really interesting to see how this board shakes out. I do think we feel really good about the guys that are in state. So I think they have a pretty good board right now. And my gut instinct is like, let's not mess this up. Like we have the last couple of years where we end visits or whatever, bring everybody in.
And if I can just add, Reggie, real quick, loaded show, man. It's been so good to be back. I don't want to, you know, not give somebody some shine. Not like we've got the entire board in front of us or anything, but another, this would obviously be, I think, a pure tackle that the staff also really likes. He'll be getting here this spring, and OB would be nice. Cameron Wagner, another Illinois kid, wrestler, top 247 kid. So that's one that I think is a little bit more wide open. Like, I think there's an Illinois school in there. I know, yeah, they went to see him. I know that Oregon's pretty deep in there. Couple SEC schools, so that'll be interesting. But I think he's hit it off well with Mateos, Fickell, and just kind of that wrestling aspect. Extra nuggets for you guys.
Baby. There you go. And this is going to continue. We're going to, I know Justin and Nick, they might try to do another more shows throughout this season about breaking on other positions. Like, I love this kind of stuff because, you know, I can't look at the entire target and prospect list. It's just, it's way overwhelming. But I like, we'll break it down by position for you guys and kind of talk through each one. Nick will come on the show, talk through the targets, through some of the guys that are doing OVs. And as we get into OV season, then we'll be able to actually, we'll put film on here and we'll actually watch the film.
Oh yeah.
On the show, which is always fun to do, but we wait for OVs for that. We want them actually to come here before we start doing that. But Nick, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us, man. We always appreciate your insight. Go check out everything Nick does on Badger247.com. And of course, we'll be back again next week to talk more about Badger hoops and Badger football as things get closer. And yes, always a great show. Justin, any final thoughts from you, Justin, before we close?
Well, I'm going to be going on vacation to Mexico. So Rajiv gets to enjoy. If you would like to join him, Nick, maybe perhaps next Sunday.
Finally,
there's a good chance.
Finally, a Justin Frisch.
No, yeah, no kidding. He doesn't have to listen to me talking over him or interrupting him.
No, you guys are amazing together. Dude, that's nice.
Have a good trip, Justin. Have a good time in Mexico. I know you're excited to go down there. You're going to probably eat a lot and drink a lot, so that's fun.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There you go. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.